Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Mario Ritter, Brian Lynn, and Dan Friedel. Katie Weaver will tell us what's trending today, and later, John Russell and Alice Bryant will bring us this week's lesson in everyday grammar. But first, here is Mario Ritter.
Members of the United Nations Security Council are considering new sanctions for North Korea in reaction to its sixth and most powerful nuclear test. However, experts say the support of China is critical to increase pressure on the government of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. China's Foreign Minister Wang Yi said Thursday the UN Security Council should respond further and take necessary measures. But Wang said sanctions and pressure must be tied to dialogue and negotiations. China has said that increased restrictions will not ease tensions on the Korean Peninsula. U.S. President Donald Trump spoke to Chinese President Xi Jinping about North Korea on Wednesday. Trump said Xi agreed on the need to answer North Korea's nuclear test, saying he does not want to see what is happening there either. On Monday, U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations Nikki Haley said the 15-member U.N. Security Council would negotiate a version of a resolution to place new sanctions on North Korea. She said the U.S. would seek a vote by Monday. On August 5th, the U.N. Security Council approved Resolution 2371. It came as the result of two long-range missile tests that North Korea carried out in July. The UN Security Council barred North Korea from exporting coal, iron, lead, and seafood, along with other restrictions. The measures were aimed at cutting about one-third of North Korea's $3 billion in export income. However, now there are calls to cut North Korea's fuel imports in an effort to build pressure on its leaders. VOA received a copy of the new proposed resolution on North Korea on Wednesday. The proposal calls for stopping North Korean cloth and clothing exports and seeks to put limits on North Koreans working in other countries. But the biggest restriction would ban the sale of oil, refined petroleum products, and natural gas liquids to the North. Support from Russia and China is needed for an oil embargo to work. Both countries are permanent members of the Security Council. They also are energy exporters to North Korea. On Wednesday, Russian President Vladimir Putin did not offer support for the idea of blocking North Korea's oil imports. Putin spoke during a meeting with South Korean President Moon Jae-in in an economic meeting in Vladivostok, Russia. China provides North Korea with most of its oil and gas. Joseph Detrani is a former special diplomat to the six-party talks. They were nuclear disarmament talks including both Korea's, China, Russia, Japan, and the U.S. Detrani says the leverage that the Chinese have on crude oil is immense. But he says an oil embargo would destabilize North Korea's economy, something China opposes. Although China and North Korea have had strained relations, Detrani says Chinese public support for an oil ban is unlikely. China doesn't want to make North Korea a total enemy. They want to have some leverage. They don't want to totally alienate the leadership in Pyongyang. Richard Bush is with the Brookings Institution's John L. Thornton China Center. He says China has to walk a fine line in its policies towards its eastern neighbor. Bush says China wants to influence North Korea to stop its nuclear and missile tests. At the same time, China worries that a complete oil embargo would cause the country to collapse. That situation would create a refugee crisis on China's border. Instead, Bush says, China may try to create some flexibility in possible new sanctions by setting a limit for yearly oil imports or by slowly decreasing them. He says China wants to preserve its own freedom of action and flexibility, but at the same time be responsive to the concerns of the international community. Yun Sun is a China expert at the Stimson Center in Washington, D.C. She says China has not shown that it is willing to cut off the North's oil supplies. She said it might press for oil exports to be considered a humanitarian exception to UN Security Council sanctions. I'm Mario Ritter.
Facebook says an operation likely based in Russia spent $100,000 to buy advertisements promoting political and social issues in the United States. The company said about 3,000 ads were bought by people operating nearly 500 fake Facebook accounts. The ads ran between June 2015 and May 2017, within the period of the 2016 U.S. presidential campaign. In a blog post, Facebook Chief Security Officer Alex Stamos said most of the ads did not specifically name the U.S. election or any candidates. Rather, they appeared aimed at amplifying divisive social and political messages on a range of major issues. These included LGBT rights, race relations, and gun control. A Facebook investigation found the fake accounts were related to each other and likely operated out of Russia. The company said it does not allow inauthentic accounts, and all were removed. Facebook also said it had identified another 2,200 ads bought for about $50,000 that might have originated in Russia. These included ads bought by accounts with IP addresses in the U.S. that were set to the Russian language. Facebook said the behavior shown in the ad buys is similar to methods used by what it calls false amplifiers who operated during the 2016 campaign. Methods included the posting of fake stories on social media to misinform and confuse the public. Earlier this year, Facebook announced several new policies intended to prevent users from spreading misinformation and fake news. The company said it is continuing to investigate possible ways Russian sources may have used its service as a way to influence the 2016 election. It added that it is cooperating with a federal investigation into the issue led by special counsel Robert Mueller. Mueller's investigation is also looking into any possible contacts between then-candidate Donald Trump's presidential campaign team and Russian officials. I'm Brian Lynn.
A group in Italy is preparing immigrants, mostly from Africa, for jobs as beekeepers. The group then helps to set up meetings between these migrants and honey producers who need employees. International aid groups say European Union efforts to reduce the flow of migrants entering Europe is leaving some businesses short on workers. The aid group Oxfam says Italy alone will need over 1.6 million workers over the next 10 years. To deal with this issue, the Italian Cambalache Association created a project called Be My Job. It trains migrant workers and refugees in beekeeping and finds them jobs in Italy's agriculture industry. Since being launched in 2014, the program has trained over 100 people, mostly from African nations south of the Sahara Desert. Be My Job has helped people like Abdul Adan. He had never worked with bees before he migrated to Europe. In fact, his only interaction with a bee was when he was stung by one as a child back home in Senegal. The insect stung Adan in the mouth while he was eating fresh honey. Today, he has become one of the program's most successful trainees. He now seems very much at ease with the bees. He doesn't cover his hands as he touches the insects' homes and inspects their progress. I said I have never done bee work. I was really scared that the bees would sting me and people would laugh and look at me. But afterward, I said, I will learn, and maybe one day I can do it in my country. Adan now works as a beekeeper in Alessandria, Italy. Mara Alacqua is the head of the Italian Cambalache Association. She says, the Be My Job project is never short on trainees. Our beds are always full, Alakwa said. Every time a person leaves the project, and so we have a spare place, that place is covered straight away within 2 days' time. As part of the program, the migrant workers also take language classes. This has been helpful for Adan, who now speaks Italian. Almost 95,000 immigrants and refugees have arrived in Italy this year. However, in the past 2 months, the number of new arrivals has dropped to more than 50% of what it was last year. Some observers have linked the drop to increased action by the Libyan Coast Guard to stop boats carrying immigrants to Europe. Before arriving in Italy, Abdul Adan lived in Libya. While there, Adan says he was held hostage, tortured, and forced to work as a slave. He later escaped on a boat to Italy. To do our work with bees, it's not a work that is hard, he says. I had already passed through stages that are harder than working with bees. If I tell you, the Libyans who took us for work, you know how much we had to eat? One piece of bread a day, and we worked hard. Francesco Panella is president of a group called Bee Life EU. Panella has worked as a beekeeper for more than 40 years. He feels that migrant workers are important for Italy. In reality, we have a huge problem in our country, he says. On one side, there is a huge problem with unemployment. But the other issue, it's not at all easy to find workers for agriculture. Panella added that Italian agriculture is based on the work of foreigners. Both of his children are immigrants. One works in Great Britain, while the other is in the United States. He says that he thinks about this when he offers work to migrants. One of the main threats to the training program is a drop in honey production. Panella notes that Italy's honey production this year is down 70% from average harvests. He thinks rising temperatures and chemical pesticides are partly to blame. While the program is helping migrants find work, life far from home can still be hard. I feel very lonely, said Adan. Sometimes, when I think of my family, it makes me want to go back home. But that's the story of immigration. Maybe one day I can go back to my country, or one day I can bring my family. No one knows what the future holds. I'm Dan Friedel.
This is what's trending today. Tennis players Roger Federer of Switzerland and Spain's Rafael Nadal have played each other dozens of times through the years. Their rivalry has included memorable matches, including finals at all but one of the world's Grand Slam championships. They have never played each other at the U.S. Open. Fans of the sport hoped that this year, two of the world's best would finally face off at Flushing Meadow in New York City. Those hopes ended Wednesday night, however. Just hours after Nadal won a spot in the semifinal round of the tournament, Federer lost in four sets to Argentina's Juan Martin del Potro. After his loss, Federer said of Del Potro, "He came up with the goods when he needed to. And I helped him a little bit, sometimes, too, maybe." Federer also said that, unlike just about everyone else, he did not spend any time at all thinking about a possible matchup with Nadal. This is the sixth time in which they were one game away from playing each other in New York. It happened in 2009, when Del Potro himself beat Nadal in the semifinals, and then Federer in the final. Federer entered the quarterfinals undefeated in Grand Slam play this season. He won titles at the Australian Open and Wimbledon, but he hurt his back at a tournament last month, which limited his preparation for the U.S. Open. Before the U.S. Open began, Nadal was as honest as can be when asked whether he hoped to face Federer. The answer was no, because he would prefer to play someone who is easier to beat. Nadal will next face Del Potro on Friday in the semifinal. The other semifinal game includes two men who have never been this far at any major: Pablo Carreño Busta of Spain versus Kevin Anderson of South Africa. On the women's side, the four remaining players are all Americans. It is the first time that has happened at the U.S. Open in 36 years. Venus Williams will play Sloane Stephens in one semifinal game, and Madison Keys will play Coco Vandeweghe in the other. And that's what's trending today. I'm Katie Weaver.
In 1963, President John Kennedy gave a famous speech at American University. In the speech, Kennedy said the following lines:
"Our problems are man-made, therefore they can be solved by man, and man can be as big as he wants. No problem of human destiny is beyond human beings."
Today's report is not about global problems, nor is it about human destiny. Instead, it is about something much more exciting: transition words.
Transitions are words that show relationships between ideas. According to grammar experts Susan Conrad and Douglas Biber, transitions are most common in academic writing. These transition words have different uses. They can suggest that a result, clarification, or example is coming. We will now look at each of these uses in greater detail.
Transition words that show a result include therefore and thus. The words you heard at the beginning of this report give you one example of therefore.
Our problems are man-made, therefore they can be solved by man.
In the quote, the word therefore connects two statements: our problems are man-made, and they can be solved by mankind. The word therefore suggests for that reason, or because of that. Thus has a similar meaning. Academic writers often use it as a way to show a summary or conclusion. You might read a paragraph that begins with the words, "Thus we conclude that." In this case, the word thus is referring to ideas or arguments presented earlier in the written work. In general, the writer is saying that the reasons already presented lead them to their conclusion.
A second use of transitions is to restate or clarify ideas. Common examples include, in other words, and i.e. Consider this example from a past Everyday Grammar program.
Adverbials can appear at different places in a sentence. In other words, they are movable.
In the example, the second sentence restates and clarifies the idea that comes in the first sentence. This added example helps to make the point more memorable and easier to understand. I.e. can also restate or clarify an idea. Writers often use it in parenthetical statements or phrases. The Everyday Grammar writer could have written the following words.
Adverbials can appear at different places in a sentence, i.e., they are movable.
This sentence has a similar meaning to the first sentence, although it is different stylistically.
A final group of transition words show that the writer is about to provide an example. Common words include for example and for instance. Consider how President Ronald Reagan uses for example in his address to the United Nations in 1988.
That's why when human rights progress is made, the United Nations grows stronger, and the United States is glad of it. Following a two-year effort led by the United States, for example, the UN Human Rights Commission took a major step toward ending the double standards and cynicism that had characterized too much of its past.
Reagan's second sentence, although lengthy, supports the point that he makes in the first sentence. This is a useful pattern to use both in writing and formal speaking.
The transitions we have discussed today can appear at different places in a sentence. This movability is important to understand for students of writing. Think back to Reagan's speech. He used, for example, in the middle of his sentence.
Following a two-year effort led by the United States, for example, the UN Human Rights Commission took a major step toward ending the double standards and cynicism that had characterized too much of its past.
Reagan could have used, for example, at another place in the sentence, the very beginning, for one. Such a sentence would have sounded like this.
For example, following a two-year effort led by the United States, the UN Human Rights Commission took a major step toward ending the double standards and cynicism that had characterized too much of its past.
Now that you have learned about transitions, you should practice using them. However, do not use them too often. Your reader or listener might lose interest if you use too many transitions. Also, you should be careful about using the transitions we have talked about today while speaking. They are polite and acceptable, however, they can make you sound very formal. With time and practice, you will learn how and when to use transitions correctly. And now, it is time for us to transition to the end of our report. I'm Alice Bryant.
And I'm John Russell.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.